Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Hello and welcome to Aggressive Negotiations. That's right, we are back at you here. I've got to say, Rishi Mays is looking beautiful these days, and it's just so great to be here with my good friend and Jedi Master, John Mills. John, how are you doing?
You know, something happened, and I feel a great joy in the Force lately. It's been one heck of a wave of happiness that has greeted all of us out here in the Star Wars fandom. And wow, you know, I mean, obviously, we're in the wake of Clone Wars Saved. And I think that there's not a single corner of the Star Wars galaxy that has not felt things get a little bit brighter of late. And it's a pretty great place to be. And I'm glad that you're here with me.
I felt something I've not felt since.
Yeah. The last time I felt it was in the presence of a TV show that I loved a whole heck of a lot.
Absolutely. thank the maker that the Clone Wars has been saved. It is coming back for 12 episodes, and we are going to dive into that. And the Clone Wars itself, we have, I think, a really fun topic, something we were kind of batting around the other day, and it just happened to be that we got some great news to couple with it. So first, though, John, we have been doing the review contest over on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and so we've been asking people to give us a review. We're collecting the next 30 reviews, to which I think we have maybe 13 left that were needed to collect those 30, because we're giving away a massive Star Wars prize pack. Massive. It's got an incredible Millennium Falcon model. We've got an amazing trivia game. There's the Solo soundtrack, and there are a couple other things. That there's the Rebels Season 3 DVD in there, and a couple other things as well. So to do that, we've been asking for people to review us, and we've been gathering those reviews, and we have a brand new review, John. And this is one. I just share it, man. It's wow.
Yes, it's a very touching review. It's from Galandro One, and if anybody read along with the Brian Daley novels, you know where that username came from. And it's a 5-star review. It says, "Longtime fan, best Star Wars podcast, hands down." Which, in and of itself, that title is very flattering. And it goes on to say, "I've been a longtime listener of this show, and after 2 years on the interwebs, I've concluded that Aggressive Negotiations is the best Star Wars podcast around. Sure, it may not have some of the bells and whistles of other shows, but the depth of discussion and sheer diversity of the topics they discuss simply makes Aggressive Negotiations a must-listen show. Matt Rushing and John Mills are superb hosts who keep it positive and engaging, but aren't afraid to recognize some of the shortcomings in the franchise. In particular, their 3-episode dissection of the old Brian Daley Han Solo trilogy was some of their best stuff. As a longtime listener, it's clear that Matt and John are passionate fans, and there's no signs that they are letting up anytime soon. In fact, I would argue that Aggressive Negotiations keeps getting better each subsequent episode, and I look forward to continuing the journey with them. Keep up the great work, guys." Well, wow. What a review that is. And I can tell you that Matt and I were both left speechless after that. So thank you so much for enjoying it that much and for listening. Thank you.
If I wasn't teary at a certain trailer that dropped today, this definitely would have just made me even more teary. So now I'm double teary. But yeah, thank you. Getting reviews like this, I just really humbled. And it means a lot to hear that from somebody. And it definitely, you know, just as I think with any creative, it spurs on both of us, I think, to continue to try and do our best work every single week and just have fun with it.
Yes. And we are going to have fun with it this week because we had planned, coincidentally, to talk about an aspect of the Clone Wars show. So the timing on this is pretty spectacular. I guess that's why we're Jedi Masters, as the Force worked in conjunction with
us. It has
something to do with it. Yeah, it must be that.
I do want to ask you, though, before we dive into that, we would be remiss if we didn't just talk a little bit about the trailer. This isn't a new show. We're not going to dissect anything. But I just wanted to kind of get your impressions. I have one quick thing. I was ecstatic to see that it looked like the base that they go to there is possibly the same base from the Rebels episodes where they meet the Fear Nox. Very similar.
I don't want to speculate too heavily about that. Obviously we have to kick off the discussion with it, at least some recognition of the trailer, but the simple fact that they built to the moment that would have resonated the most with every single fan of the Star Wars series as a whole that's been a longtime fan, and seeing her back on screen, seeing Ahsoka back on screen, is such a cornerstone, because she's a cornerstone character. She has become, yeah. I mean, this is the thing that's so hard to describe to someone who's like a casual fan like my wife, who's never watched Clone Wars or Rebels, is I don't think that I'm speaking out of turn for, quote unquote, the fans or anything like that, but she is as important a character to the saga as any Skywalker. And she has been instrumental, I think, in so many wonderful plot lines and revelations that it's just wonderful. Like, I honestly remember when she left in Clone Wars, and then when she came back in Rebels, that was a huge moment. But to find out here she is again, back in Anakin's life, closer to the tipping point, I'm so amazingly curious about that. That, that is obvious. And seeing all of the, all of the those ships, at that base that you were just talking
about.
That
was awesome.
Seeing all of those ships. But it was also an incredible echo of not just the end of Attack of the Clones, but the cover of the comic for Clone Wars issue 1. Remember the Zygarian slaver arc? If you look at the art for that, it's Anakin and Ahsoka looking up at a very similar formation of ships. And so that was wonderful to see as well. Mm-hmm. So just and what I loved about it was about tracking in and getting to the characters. It wasn't about trying to sell big action set pieces in a trailer. Yeah. It was about the emotional impact. So yes.
Well, I think it just goes to show, like you said, that these characters, that's what we fell in love with the Clone Wars, and it helped us fall in love with so many characters. I mean, it's not just one, but I know my wife, but she loves the Anakin from the Clone Wars. You know, we both adore Ahsoka. She's she is my wife's favorite character, and she's my favorite female character of all time in Star Wars. Nobody's been able to eclipse that yet. Then you think of like the Asajj Ventresses and the Rexes, and getting to know
Rex.
Jedi Knights like Plo Koon or Kit Fisto or somebody like a Hondo, or the list is kind of endless. When we think of bringing Darth Maul back, Savage Opress, all of this stuff that they did in the Clone Wars, and all of that emotion definitely hit me today watching that trailer. And yes, the moment Ahsoka came, I think I'm with so many other men and women around the world who just kind of, you started getting pretty teary, and you weren't ashamed of it whatsoever.
That's the thing that really needs to be underscored, is that speaks to how much this resonates, because it's very easy, I think, sometimes for outside observers to say, oh, this is a cartoon. Why are you so attached to it? Why is it provoking this reaction? And it's because it doesn't matter the medium that it's told in. This is great writing. This is great execution that happens to be animated. And it's great animation at that. You know, like it's such a testament to how writing underpins and editing, of course, and music and all of that stuff. You know, I'm not discounting anything, but I would use Clone Wars as just that leverage tool to communicate to people that animation isn't just like cartoon is almost like a dismissive word nowadays. It's animation.
Yes.
And it's so artistic and deliberate and drives home, you know, what resonates about these characters for us. And speaking of the resonant characters, you know, who we planned to talk about this week is somebody who gets very much a lot of character expansion in the series, and that's Count Dooku. And I think that this is good timing for us to talk about Dooku, because Dooku was a character where I like him in the movies a lot. I enjoy him. I think Christopher Lee plays him with a lot of flair. It still blows my mind. Anytime I slow down and think about the fact that Christopher Lee was not on set with Hayden Christensen and everybody else at the opening of Revenge of the Sith, it still bends my mind. I still can hardly believe it. But his character is quick in the films, and I think that he's a prime example of the fleshing out that the Clone Wars allowed everybody to get with these characters that, you know, the movies are jam-packed, and so the Clone Wars took its time. And I know from my perspective, I came away with a bigger appreciation of Dooku after the Clone Wars series, after spending time with him.
One of the things that I really appreciated about what the Clone Wars did is that I felt like I had a better understanding of Dooku's motivation for joining Palpatine.
Mm-hmm.
In that I felt like it helped me see that Dooku sees the problems of the Jedi. He sees the problems in the, you know, the Senate with the Republic. And it seems really interesting because I feel as though, you know, Dooku, he's created this confederacy of independent systems. And it's almost as though he's trying to start over and create something from the ground up, but do it right. You know, to find a way to replace what is so broken. You know, away from the bureaucracy of what the Republic had become, to make something that's much more purely democratic. It almost seems like, because they have the parliamentary system and everything like that for the Confederacy. So, and it's not about him wanting necessarily the power of the Sith to destroy the universe or anything like that, but it's really to find a way to break what was broken and to rebuild it into something new. And I don't know, that's something that really stuck out to me with the character of Dooku throughout the series. And I thought that, to me, adding some of that kind of nuance so he isn't just another mustache-twirling villain, but he really does. I believe that he feels like this is the way to do it. Like, the Jedi had failed, the Republic has failed, so this is the way to go about this. Then to destroy and to rebuild.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to sort of like the road to hell being paved with good intentions.
Is that
Dooku is a prime example of that, and I think that.
Is that, you know, the road to Sorrento is paid to good intentions?
Yeah. but seriously, like, it's one of those things where Dooku serves as such a, I think he's a very relevant character, especially nowadays where you have this, you have people who are very angry about corruption in government, about the state of affairs, about the way things work. And I'm not talking about just currently. I'm talking about you can go back to any election cycle. There are people who are angry about it and frustrated. And understanding better, I think, that Dooku is angry and frustrated and justified in his, in this anger, but the way he goes about it, you know, it's really an example of like how you go about things, you know, is burning the system down the right way to go, or is working within the system the right way to go? And in a sense, it seems like Dooku, once he finds out who is behind everything, he has no choice but to go off and split the galaxy in two, because, you know, he's angling, I think, especially when you look at his arcs, he seems much more interested in personal power. Palpatine is interested in control. Palpatine is interested in this sort of big picture, micromanagement, central planning thing, whereas Dooku doesn't care so much about that. He cares about his own power, his own benefit, his own advancement. And I think that's what Palpatine is able to use to keep him in check, is that he's not thinking big enough picture to ever succeed, to ever topple Palpatine.
Do you think that one of the reasons that he has these apprentices is that his hope is to maybe overthrow Palpatine one day and maybe to not necessarily have a Jedi or Sith, but to just basically to use this power to get what he wants, which is to destroy the Republic, destroy what he thinks was helping destroy the galaxy, which is the Jedi, because they failed, and then be able to rule the galaxy, not necessarily just as a lone dictator, but as, you know, maybe a more benevolent dictator or something like that. Do you think that's possibly one of the reasons he has somebody like Asajj and then, you know, Savage? There's a real rhyming thing going on there.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's going to be a Sith, then yeah, part of the game plan is he's supposed to try to overthrow the Master and take things on. And, you know, so yes, the apprentices tie into that. But what's really interesting about it is this idea that the fact that he's willing to cast Asajj aside, and she even makes the plea. She's like, we could have taken Palpatine out. We could have done this. And instead, Dooku still has too much of a sense of loyalty. Like, I think that speaks to the limiting of his view. Now, as much as I am loath to lean on outside sources, I do remember from the Episode 3 novelization that he wasn't really sold on the idea of the rule of two. He was sold more on the idea that he would get Jedi to follow him and he would remake the order the way that he saw fit. But I don't know if that comes into play, because I don't really discuss that directly with the Clone Wars. But I honestly wonder, I mean, I would love to get, you know, a book or an arc or whatever, where you sort of have a moment, because the sense I get, I want to see if you get this sense, in the whole Clone Wars series is that he's in over his head. He signed up for this and he had a vision for how things were going to go. And I think the moment where you see Palpatine force him to turn on Asajj and he has this real moment of remorse, he's like, you know, he's basically saying, I'm sorry, I got to do this. That, I think, is the key to Dooku as well, is that I mean, do you get that sense? I think that there's a sense of a guy who bought into an ideal and just it mismanaged. He wound up and there was no turning back afterward.
Yeah, I like that you're pulling that out, because, I mean, he does, you know, one of his rare instances where he kind of questions Palpatine and saying, but do I have to? And then Palpatine kind of gives him the smackdown and saying, yes, get rid of her or else, basically. And so then, of course, he comes off as a cold-hearted jerk to Asajj, but it's because, you know, he needs her to get the message. And I think in some ways, you know, he could possibly be trying to do that so that she doesn't come around and pique Palpatine's interest anymore. And so that she won't end up dead. So I can see that. And it would make sense for somebody who taught Qui-Gon to get somewhat close to his apprentices and have an affinity for them. Obviously, theirs is much more Sith master and apprentice, but I do think there is a sense of caring there, and I think you have a point, and I think that it's a great read because it does add so much more to that. And I think you're right, too. The moment that he loses Asajj, he wants another apprentice, right? You know, and he goes to the Night Sisters, and they give him Savage, you know, who's just a pawn in this game anyway, and turns into a whole other mess, which brings us back, you know, Maul and all that stuff, which is great. But it's all because he doesn't want to be alone in this. You know, he doesn't want to be just by himself. He wants a bodyguard. He wants somebody by his side. And so, you know, there is this sense of longing there. And I find that really fascinating that that gives us a little bit of an insight to Dooku as a character who, you know, he's not just straight up cold-hearted bad dude. You know, there's
right.
There seems to be so much more to him. And I feel like you mentioned, you know, you would like to see this somewhere. I feel like I want the Dooku book or the Dooku comic or the Dooku animated series almost, where it's like I really get the full understanding of what drove him to make the decision, you know, to turn to Palpatine and to become part accomplice in all of this. And
yeah,
like I feel like almost like a Darth Plagueis type novel that goes through a bunch of his life would be fascinating. It'd just be a fascinating story.
I think there's also the aspect that he reflects back Palpatine's gravest mistake, and which Lucas himself even said was his biggest mistake, was that he didn't go back to the drawing board after Maul. Palpatine, in a sense, is impatient. He wants it. He's gotten there. He wants it. He wants to be the guy. And he turns Dooku, and we're talking about Dooku's, you know, quote-unquote failings as a Sith, as if that's a bad thing. But, like, you know, his attachment, his, you know, his kindness, his underlying idealism, I think that sets up Palpatine's biggest mistake, which is then turning to Anakin, who, you know, becomes Vader. It's the exact same mistake, but is it a mistake? Is Palpatine unwilling to have an apprentice who does anything but his bidding, his direct bidding? Maul is, you know, go out and do it, and young at that point and always listening to him. He tolerates no dissent from Dooku. There's a sense that he doesn't tolerate dissent very well from Vader. Is that, I understand how the Sith work, and you got to make the apprentice hungry and all of those sorts of things, but he seems to be unable to set up his apprentice for success. Do you think that that is just the nature of the Sith themselves, or is Dooku illustrating a failing of Palpatine's in terms of Sith philosophy?
Yeah, I think actually it's that the Sith just can't set their apprentices up truly for success. You know, and I think you see that with, and if you look through the Clone Wars and what we really get with Dooku, with Asajj and everything, he doesn't truly set her up for success because he's never truly apprenticing. He's berating. And in the end, nobody truly learns like that. All you do is just foster more anger. You don't usually end up fostering better skill. And you don't create a better person through nothing but greed, hate, selfishness, and just pure unadulterated desire. And I think you really see that, and it becomes a key to understanding the deficiencies of the Sith as a philosophy.
See, what's really interesting, and that, you know, this is another thing, you know, the Sith philosophy, I think, gets some really interesting exploration in the Clone Wars, but, like, Maul was molded from childhood, sort of thing, the, you know, the way the Jedi did it. And Palpatine should have been willing to just play the long game and say, okay, fine, I got to go back to the drawing board. It'll be the next generation that wins. It won't be me. And I think that I will always be puzzled by, when Maul comes back, why Palpatine doesn't bring him back as his Sith apprentice. It would have made sense, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it have made sense to have Maul take out Dooku? Like, I will always puzzle over, and I think it's a fun thing to puzzle over, why he didn't bring Maul back. Maul survived.
Yeah.
Good grief. Do you want any more evidence that you've got an apprentice who can carry on the Sith legacy?
You know, I think what we end up seeing there, though, is that what he gets used for, Maul has become somebody who is too independent at that point.
Mm.
And but Palpatine uses that to his advantage with what we see. You know, we understand from the film Solo that the crime syndicates are in league with the Empire. They're being allowed to do what they're doing because of the Empire, you know. And so I think Maul is very much a key to that, and Palpatine is just using him. He even says, you know, the last time we saw him in the Clone Wars, I still have uses for you, and this seems to be the best use, because he uses the independence and the drive that Maul still has. And he gives him enough of a leash, you know, like it seems to be a pretty decently long leash that he has. You know, Dooku, though, is somebody that I think we pegged earlier, and you mentioned, I think rightly, is Palpatine sees the ways that which he can manipulate him to get what he wants from him.
You know, actually, a thought that came into my brain, and I know this is going down a rabbit hole, but we pondered at one point, was Vader so broken that he couldn't enable Palpatine to get to the world between worlds? We talked about that with Rebels, I think probably over on 602. But is that also a factor in him not bringing Maul back, is to get to that world between worlds? He casts Maul aside because Maul is half robot at that point. And he says, no, I'm going to take the Skywalker kid, and he's going to become Darth Vader. We're going to do all these great things. And then Anakin has essentially the same thing happen, where he's a broken body, and so his conduit to the Force becomes flawed. And so is there a sense then, I mean, are we opening up something where I'd love to see some sort of moment where Palpatine, you know, thinks to himself, I should have stuck with Dooku. I could have at least gotten, you know, kept things rolling along instead of casting him aside.
And that makes, see, and there's a great thing, you know, going all the way back, you know, to the Clone Wars, the Yoda arc, which we just talked about not too long ago. This whole idea of, you know, they do the Sith magics thing in that bowl, which allows them to then have that interaction with Yoda in mm-hmm. this kind of almost nether world. So it almost seems as though the team up of Palpatine and Dooku is able to get mm-hmm. somewhere Force related that could be linked to, you know, something like the World Between Worlds. So it seems like he's much more successful in that with Dooku than he is with Vader at any point.
So we know with the trailer that dropped that we're going to get 12 episodes. And I know that, you know, we've got some undoubtedly interesting stuff coming up, and it's going to be very difficult to stay away from the speculation game, which is so easy to fall into as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't see him in the trailer. Do you think we'll see Dooku again in these 12 episodes?
I hope he's a part of it somewhere, and I would think that he is, because and just speculating, you know, we knew they had planned out the Clone Wars to the place where it would kind of go through Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
so if we're going to be using these 12 episodes to do something like that, I can't see how Dooku can't be a part of that somehow.
Yeah, you know, because, I just ponder, because Dooku truly is a character that I think is one of the ones that benefited the most from the Clone Wars series. I think it turned Dooku from what I would call an accent character, somebody who drove home the point, to somebody who had their own full arc, their own full sense of identity coming out of this show. So, like, I mean, it's just such a reason. It's such a reason to rejoice that it's coming back, because it's just more time getting to know, you know, these people even better, and spend time with them again.
You know, as we were conversing, John, I had an amazing tweet that I think I just completely agree with. You know, with getting this, isn't that time for us to get that full, complete chronological set of the Clone Wars in 4K once this is finally over, the way George intended it to be released, once it was finally out fully as a series? I just feel like that 4K set is needed once this is over.
Well, I will say that those of us who were cash poor enough not to get the previous Blu-ray set certainly hope that the next set is a whole hog 4K transfer and everything like that. But I will always be team non-linear. But however they want to give it to me, honestly, at this point, I mean, I always think of Homer Simpson, the waiting game sucks. Let's play Hungry, Hungry Hippos. Like, I'm going out of my mind. I'm like, why would you tell me this and I can't buy it right now? Give me now, please. I can't take it. Just to get back to the earlier point, I feel like a kid again. Every time I watch the Clone Wars, every time I see this new trailer, I feel like a kid. And I'm a grown adult with a mortgage and obligations and a family. And I'm able to sit back and look at Star Wars as if I were a child. And I love that so much.
You know, when I was doing the retrospective with Nick, and we were talking about 10 years of the Clone Wars and just kind of its mm-hmm. legacy, for me, you know, sitting in that theater, seeing the movie for the first time, I had that unadulterated joy of as if I was just seeing another Star Wars movie again.
Yep.
Because at that point, there were no more Star Wars movies coming out, right?
And
right. So this gave me that feeling that I loved about every time I saw a new Star Wars film. And then every time the episodes came out, I felt that as well. Even if they were droid episodes, I was still enjoying the fact that I'm watching new Star Wars every week. And every week, it felt like a 22-minute Star Wars movie.
Right.
And so to get back to that feeling where it's not about stuff on the internet, right? It's just
right.
about pure Star Wars love.
Yeah.
100% Star Wars love. And that's what I love about this. I think the reaction to this has been that the same. Like when I watched the panel and the trailer finished and people were just cheering and you know, yelling, "Thank you, Dave. We love you, Dave. We love you guys." You know, like that is what this used to be about, was just an enjoyment of
happiness. Yeah.
And the other part I think of it too is that it's the story. And we connect with these characters we talked about at the very beginning. That's what drew us into this story and to the Clone Wars in general, is they found a way to make us care about all of these characters in a way that we hadn't maybe even before. Even in Obi-Wan, even in Anakin, even a Padme, even a Dooku, a Palpatine, all the
right.
Grievous. And then they brought in new characters like Ahsoka and then really built up a character like Asajj or a Rex or, I mean, they made us fall in love with the clones, for gosh sakes. So, I think this is the joy that we share as fans when this happens. And so, I appreciate them giving us this opportunity to be able to feel that joy again. And, wow.
Speaking of feeling that joy, Matt, let's trot out a crazy idea here that to celebrate this. And to let's go ahead and tease this to celebrate this here on Aggressive Negotiations. We are going to do a commentary for the Clone Wars movie that came out. We were talking about it just, you know, because of the anniversary and everything like that. I think this gives us a good reason to get back in the commentary mode and go ahead and do the original Clone Wars movie. What do you think?
You know, I absolutely love that our commentaries have been on the most random of Star Wars. I mean, we did Star Wars, right? But then we did Rogue One. Mm-hmm. And what else have we done? Is that it?
We did the Force Awakens with
that's right. We
with
did
the
that.
Nerd Party as a whole.
Yeah.
But here on the show we did Star Wars, we did Rogue One, and now we're doing Clone Wars because nonlinear storytelling works very well.
We'll do what we want. I think that's a great plan. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And what better way to celebrate 10 years of the Clone Wars and the joy of more Clone Wars coming than going back to the very beginning where it all started. And so, John, if anybody wants to celebrate with you, because I feel like it's time to celebrate good times, come on. Where can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me doing my Yub Nub dance in the wake of this news over on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. You can find me right here on the network co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we talk about the nuts and bolts of movies that you love, sometimes movies that you hate. And, of course, floating out there, co-hosting Wars with Nerds with my pal Craig. But, Matt, I know that there are many ways that people can listen to and reach out to you on the internet. So why don't you let them know where they can go?
Well, when I'm not hanging out on Rishi Maze, you can find me over on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You can find me here on the network with Drea Kaufman as I do Owl Post, talking about Harry Potter each and every chapter of the series. So make sure that you check that out. I am also over on the Trek FM network, where I do a show called The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You mentioned earlier the 602 Club. We frequently gather there to talk about Star Wars, but we also cover every fandom we love because it is a general geek show. So we try to get as much in as possible. And this summer has been jam-packed full of goodness. So make sure you check out the 602 Club. And then last but not least, you can find me doing a little show with my good friend Courtney called Cinema Stories as we talk all about films, but through the lens of faith. But John, after all that, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.